You ever read a book that made you angry you hadn't read it sooner? I picked up a copy of West with the Night about 15 years ago at a used bookstore in Sedona, and I sat in my truck in the parking lot and read 40 pages before I even started the engine. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hanger on Radio Hanger. And today I want to tell you about the woman who wrote that book, a woman who did something in 1936 that most of the men in aviation said was impossible. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. Now, Beryl Markham. If you know the name, you probably know the headline. First person to fly solo across the Atlantic from east to west. Not the first woman. The first person east to west, against the prevailing winds, against every meteorological advantage that Lindbergh had 9 years earlier going the other direction. But the headline doesn't even scratch the surface of who this woman was. Beryl was born in 1802. Wait, let me get that right. 1902, Ashwell, England. But she didn't stay English for long. Her father, Charles Clutterbuck, was a horse trainer, and when Beryl was 4 years old, he packed up the family and moved to British East Africa, what we now call Kenya. Her mother couldn't take it, went back to England, left Beryl with her father on a farm outside Nyoro in the highlands near the Great Rift Valley. Now here's where it gets interesting. This little English girl grew up barefoot in the African bush. She hunted warthog with the local Nandi children. She learned to speak Swahili and Nandi before she could properly write English. She got mauled by a neighbor's lion when she was maybe 7 or 8 years old. Not a wild lion, a supposedly tame one named Doris. The lion grabbed her by the leg, and the scars stayed with her for life. Most kids would have developed a healthy fear of, well, everything after that. Beryl decided fear was overrated. By the time she was 18, she was a licensed horse trainer. The youngest in Kenya. The first woman. She trained winners. She moved in circles that included the most eccentric, brilliant, and frankly scandalous characters in colonial East Africa. The so-called Happy Valley set. Aristocrats and adventurers living in the Kenyan highlands like rules were something that happened to other people, but horses weren't enough. Because in the early 1930s, bush pilots were opening up East Africa, and Beryl looked up one day and saw a De Havilland gypsy moth droning over the Rift Valley and thought, I need to do that. Her flight instructor was a man named Tom Campbell Black, one of the finest pilots in Africa. She earned her commercial license. She earned her B license, which meant she could carry passengers and freight for hire. She became a bush pilot, flying mail, supplies, and the occasional elephant hunter into strips that were nothing more than a clearing hacked out of the thorn bush. Strips with no windsock, no markers, sometimes no real runway at all. Just a patch of red dirt between the acacia trees. Think about that for a second. This is the 1930s. Aviation is barely 30 years old. Instruments are primitive. She's flying a single-engine biplane over some of the most unforgiving terrain on the planet. Lions, leopards, and elephants below. Thunderstorms the size of counties building over the highlands every afternoon. No radar, no weather service worth the name. She navigated by rivers, by railroad tracks, by the shape of the land, and she got good, very good. She could spot a downed pilot or a herd of elephants from the air when nobody else could. She'd fly clients out to hunting camps at dawn, land on strips she'd never seen before, and be back in Nairobi by lunch. The local pilots, all men, all initially skeptical, eventually just accepted it. Beryl could fly, but the Atlantic, that was something else. By 1936, the Atlantic had been crossed east to west exactly once solo and non-stop, and that was by Jim Mollison in 1932. The westbound crossing was the hard one. You're flying into the wind the entire way. The prevailing westerlies that help you going east to west, excuse me, going west to east, they fight you every mile going the other direction. It's longer in time, longer in fuel burn, and the weather over the North Atlantic in September is about as forgiving as a tax audit. Beryl decided she was going to do it. She had backing from a few wealthy friends, and she acquired a Vega Gull, a Percival Vega Gull to be precise, a low-wing monoplane with a 200-horsepower De Havilland Gypsy 6 engine. Beautiful little airplane. She called it the Messenger. The cabin was mostly fuel tank. They'd fitted extra tanks wherever they could. When that airplane was loaded for the crossing, it carried about 255 gallons of fuel, and it was heavy, dangerously heavy for the available runway. September 4, 1936, Abingdon, England, late afternoon. The weather report was, let's be generous and call it discouraging. Headwinds, cloud, rain, fog forecast over the Canadian coast. The kind of forecast that makes a sensible pilot say, let's try again next week. Beryl climbed into that Vega Gull and took off. Pull up a chair for this part, because I want you to feel what that flight was like. She climbed out over the English coast as the sun was getting low. Crossed the Irish coast near Galway as darkness fell, and then there was nothing. Nothing but black ocean below and cloud above and the steady drone of that Gypsy 6 engine. No autopilot, no GPS, no moving map. She had a compass, an airspeed indicator, an altimeter, and a watch. That's about it. She navigated by dead reckoning. Time, speed, heading. The same math we all learned in ground school. Except she was doing it over featureless ocean in the dark with her life hanging on the answer. The hours ground by. She flew through rain. She flew through cloud. Ice began forming on the wings and she had to descend to warmer air, burning more fuel, losing her planned altitude. The fuel gauge, such as it was a sight glass on the main tank. She watched the fuel level drop and did the math in her head and tried not to think about what the headwind was really costing her. Somewhere over the mid-Atlantic, in the dead of night, the engine coughed. Now, if you've ever had an engine hiccup over open water, even over a lake, you know what that does to your pulse. Imagine it over the North Atlantic, 1,000 miles from anywhere, in the dark. She checked the fuel selector. She leaned the mixture, the engine smoothed out. Probably a bit of water in the fuel, or a momentary vapor lock. But for a few seconds, she was staring at the possibility of ditching in the North Atlantic at night, alone, in September. The engine kept running. Dawn came somewhere over the Western Atlantic. She'd been flying for almost 20 hours. The fuel was getting critical. She crossed the coast of Nova Scotia and started looking for a place to set down. Cape Breton Island, fog, low cloud, terrible visibility. She was exhausted, running on fumes in every sense of the word, and then the engine quit for real. The fuel was gone. All 255 gallons burned across 3,600 miles of ocean in headwind. The Messenger became a glider. Beryl did what any good pilot would do. She picked the best spot she could see, which wasn't much, and put it down. She crash-landed in a peat bog on Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia. The Vega Gull nosed over in the soft ground. The propeller shattered. The landing gear collapsed. Beryl walked away. She had a gash on her forehead, and she was cold and soaked with mud and fuel. But she walked away. 21 hours and 25 minutes after leaving England, she had done it. First solo east-to-west crossing of the North Atlantic. She'd flown roughly 3,600 miles. Most of it at night, most of it in weather, all of it alone.
And here's the part that gets me. Here's the part I think about when I'm grumbling about a bumpy ride in my pressurized GPS-equipped radar-painted modern airplane. She was 34 years old. She weighed about 125 pounds. She had no radio. She had no life raft. She had a thermos of coffee, some chicken sandwiches, and a hip flask of brandy that her friend gave her for courage. That was her survival kit for a night crossing of the North Atlantic. The courage wasn't in the flask now. You'd think that would be the end of the story, right? Triumph. Headlines. Fame. Well, she got the headlines for about a week. The New York Times ran it on the front page. She did a ticker tape parade. But here's the thing about being a woman in aviation in 1936. The world was perfectly happy to admire you for a few days and then forget about you. Amelia Earhart, who was a friend of Beryl's actually, got more lasting attention, partly because Earhart had a much better publicity machine and partly because Earhart's disappearance the following year became the kind of mystery that feeds itself forever. Beryl went back to her life. She moved to California for a while. She wrote that book, West with the Night, published in 1942. It didn't sell, not at first. The war was on, and nobody was buying memoirs about African bush flying and Atlantic crossings. The book went out of print. She went back to Kenya, went back to training horses, won the Kenya Derby 6 times, lived a complicated, sometimes difficult life. She wasn't easy to get along with. She'd been married 3 times. She could be imperious, difficult, charming, and utterly impossible, sometimes all in the same afternoon. But that book sat there like a time bomb in the used bookstores of the world waiting. In 1982, a small California publisher reissued West with the Night, and this time people noticed. Ernest Hemingway had once written in a letter to his editor, Maxwell Perkins, back in 1942, that Beryl Markham had written so well that he felt ashamed of himself as a writer, Hemingway, ashamed of his own writing, compared to hers. When the book came back into print, it became a bestseller. Beryl was 80 years old, living in a small cottage near the Ungong Racecourse in Nairobi, training horses mostly forgotten by the aviation world. Suddenly, people were showing up at her door wanting to talk about a flight she'd made 46 years earlier. She died in 1986,
50 years almost to the month after that Atlantic crossing. There's a passage in West with the Night that I've read probably 100 times. She's writing about flying over Africa at night, and she says that you can live a lifetime and never really be alive for more than a few scattered moments. And that, those moments, the ones where everything is real and sharp and you're fully present, those happen most often in an airplane. I think every pilot reading this or listening to this, I think every one of you knows exactly what she meant. Back when avgas was cheap and airspace was free, there were people who flew not because it was a career or a hobby, but because it was the only way they knew how to be fully alive. Beryl Markham was one of those people. She flew barefoot in Africa, she flew across the Atlantic into the dark, and she wrote about it in prose that Hemingway envied. Most of what I drew on today comes from Mary Lovell's biography, Straight On Till Morning, and from Beryl's own words in West with the Night. Both are worth your time. If you want to find more stories like this one, we're at radiohanger.com. I'm Taildragger. Go read that book. And next time you're droning along at night with nothing but your instruments and the sound of the engine, think about doing it over the North Atlantic with a thermos and a compass. See you next time.